Blog Talk Radio.
Matthew Thomas Chavitz. You all know him as Ed Finguardian. I think he's one of the most knowledgeable, insightful soccer people in the American soccer sphere. So we had a chance to talk to him about a lot of things this week. It was really good to have him on. And I guess with that in mind, we'll get into the interview a little bit. And some of the things that we were able to talk about, ranging from tactical trends in MLS to just a bunch of stuff with the U.S. men's national team, who's impressed us through about a third of the MLS season that we're through now. And then we close talking about the U.S. forwards and goalkeeper, of course, what we'll do with Christian Pulisic. So let's just get right into it. Here's Matthew Tomaszewicz. And I'll warn you now that the audio on at least one of the clips, you're just going to have to bear with me. Sounds like there was some typing going on and I didn't filter it out properly.
We're kind of 11 weekends into MLS now. Are there any bird's eye view sort of trends that you've seen this year that are different to you than maybe last autumn?
I think it's more the talent is consistently, right? Maybe one thing is the talent is consistently up level, right? So it becomes almost more of an organizational thing rather than a club or a tactical thing, right? Like, for example, I was just tweeting this out during the Red Bulls game, right? Like, look at the Red Bulls, right? Not sure what they're doing with their, compensation structure, right? They've got Tyler Adams, Sean Davis, and Felipe in central midfield, right? And so they look at that and it's like, I can skimp on the midfield or I gotta move a player, right?
Right.
Which is, a fair consideration with the MLS salary cap. Like, it's hard to fault them, right? But at the same time, everybody is up-leveling talent around you. And Tyler Adams is great. Sean Davis is great. Prime time, right? So you basically have two central midfielders, and I wouldn't consider Felipe a difference maker, right? He's a nice player, but he's not a difference maker.
Right.
So you basically just weakened your central midfield by dealing with Cardi, who is arguably one of the top central midfielders, right? He's maybe not going to win a battle against, I don't even know who's, against Acosta and Green stuff, right?
Yeah.
But you pair him with McCarty and they can at least cancel him out, right?
Yeah.
Now the Red Bulls got holes in the back line. Their central midfield can't shield the ball. This is what's happening with the Galaxy today, right? Those guys just continually passing through where Sean Davis is supposed to be, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the thing is, are you funding your talent enough? Right? It's not okay to rest. Just because you had a strength in central midfield last year, right, or right wing, or whatever you want to call it, everybody's getting better around you. So you have to pick where you're going to be better and ensure you keep funding your team, right? It's not like just status quo, right? Like, good example of that is the Union, right, who are, hopefully play a little bit better now, right? they brought in Moutinho, and who was the French guy that they had?
That's Orlando.
Who was the central midfielder that went back to France? He went back last year, right? But, they lost the deal, and they were good there for a year or so, which is under Hackworth or Curtin, or I forget who it was, right? And then they did decide not to get better in central midfield, right, until bringing him together, right?
Yeah.
Then they sort of lost him the run, right? And so you just can't weaken yourself, right? So I think it goes to this. Like, a lot of the good teams in MLS, right, have good center backs and central midfielders, right? And then they try to put their DPs, at least. They try to put their DPs and their young, exciting players, you know, in the top, in the front four, right?
Yeah.
And a lot more teams are, Memphis ready to do that this year, right? Minnesota wasn't, so they don't for Cronin, right? You know, conversely, some of them just being long winded.
No, it's okay. It's building to a second question.
And they lost Soberg or Schoenberg, whoever that guy is.
Right.
Central. But they also lost Cronin and Jones.
Yeah.
Right? And they suck now. Right? it wasn't sustainable. Like, they're never going to have a recession. That's exactly what happens, right? It's like if you can't keep the integrity of your team, you can't take chances with your attackers. Right? And sometimes if you have a highly creative attacker, right, you can put some pressure on the defense that way, right, but it's not going to be consistent if that guy gets marked out of the game or whatever. So I think the more thing is, where are you up-leveling talent? Because everybody's up-leveling talent at a faster rate. That would be probably the biggest challenge, right?
Okay. So in terms of teams that have stockpiled depth, and I don't even know if Toronto's an example because they've done it sort of everywhere, and might be one of the deepest teams, if not the deepest team that we've seen, at least this early in a season in MLS. I mean, the fact that they could get through, what was it, five games with, I don't think they got all 15 points, but I think it was 13 of 15.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
but what's an example of someone who did that properly? Was it maybe Orlando bringing in John Spector? And just having Nocerino healthy, or.
I think you can first look at Dallas and just because they probably won't win Correa out that much, right?
Right.
Easily you've seen them doing something with, we've got Hedges already, let's deal Zimmerman, right?
Yeah.
Or, last year, I made a comment earlier on Twitter, it's like, everyone gave him shit when they went out and got Garrito. They're like, you already have a call. And Perez like, no fucking shit, now I got two guys that are going to fucking slaughter you. Right? So like, when you look at, depth, it's like, they have that depth, and they have, some other, and now, it's funny, Dallas has added that Corona guy, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
But, it gives them the luxury of getting a fullback who can be in possession because their defense is so organized and it's so dominating, right? I'm not really answering your question. So.
No, it's okay. I mean, I think, let's talk about Toronto a little bit then. I mean, because I think it's pretty impressive to be able to do what they've just done in the last 20 days. But I also don't know that, they're necessarily a team that, if they played the MLS Cup tomorrow, I don't think they'd beat Dallas. I just don't. And maybe, I don't think they'd win. I think Dallas would beat them.
Then we get to that level of the attacking depth, right? They've got a better Josie this year. Giovinco's not on as much, but he's still Giovinco,
Yeah.
So, it's the same thing. It's like they've got a very, they've got it organized in central midfield, right? They figured that out. They figured out their back line a little bit more, right? And now they've got a little bit more attacking depth up top, right? So, the more attacking depth, right, becomes like, it's like, where do you have a weakness? Like think about it this way. It's like, if you have all good players, you can't not play to one side when there's a good player for the other team, right?
Yeah.
So when you start thinking like that, you're like, you either have to have more long balls, right? But you also think, having that level of, of attacking depth, right, keeps the fullbacks back, has the back line drop back a little bit more too, and that just helps you if you're in this case Toronto with already now a more organized central midfield and defense.
Yeah, 3 goals from Ricketts in 8 days. Pretty
right, because he's got that flexibility to run stuff, right?
Yeah.
And they can
use
him for that flexibility. Then you got the Raheem Edwards guy too, right? So maybe you could talk about a trend as like you see Joe Jones in Seattle. You see Grana in Dallas, you see Raheem Edwards up in Toronto. It's like if you've got enough
you mentioned Jovan Jones, who I think maybe one of the most underrated players in the league. Are you concerned with his team, though, with what you've seen early in the year from Seattle?
Yeah, I think it's funny because it's like I think the love fest was rolled out and Alonzo is like, yeah, it's the beginning of the year still, right? You know, and Alonzo's not injured, right? Like, and same thing, like, I think they're a little weak in central midfield. It's just that old Rodon and Alonzo have not been injured yet, right? So I would think that they're a little thin there, so that would definitely be a concern, right? But, you know, part of what they have too, right, is they've got Lodeiro and Dempsey who drop back into that area to provide some stability, right?
Right.
So, you know, I think I'm certainly concerned about what they're going to do. There's not enough money to go around in MLS to have good depth, right? And so, you know, if you're a team like the Toronto, that's obviously paid up somehow and also found some of the talent that has depth, that's a major, major advantage, right? You can look at Toronto versus the Red Bulls, right? The Red Bulls are not playing great this year, right? They had to deal one of their players for nothing, and they haven't picked anybody up yet, right? And, you know, it's like if you were saying, if you were picking, like, the top five guys, like, in like, a pickup basketball game, right? And all of a sudden, and you picked the guys, and all of a sudden, you said, okay, the top guy from this team, I'm trading him for nothing, right? And everyone else has to step up a level, right? Right? So it's that same thing, right?
Yeah.
You know? And it's that thin. Like, talent is that thin. Nevertheless, it's like you don't have, like, you know, Anthony Martial coming off the bench, you know, when Rashford gets injured, or Wayne Rooney coming off the bench, you know, when Blanton gets injured, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's the big difference. That's why there's parity in MLS, because there's injuries, right?
Yeah.
And if you change the talent equation, and I think Hurt was the one who mentioned, he's like the top four in MLS on each team can probably compete closely, but not everywhere, right? With some of the top four in any other top league, right? But after the top four, right, that's where all the other leagues excel, right? Because they've got all these other players, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so it's the same thing. I just think it's the same thing in MLS. And you're seeing it all over the board, right? You can see it like DC United, right? It's like getting a little bit older. Boswell's getting a little bit older. You know, they didn't really do anything, you know, didn't really add anything appreciably to their team. And so they're sucking, right? So, yeah.
No, I think you're kind of seeing it with Atlanta as well, which, and, you know, everybody, there's this love fest with Atlanta, and I'm from there, so I think it's fantastic that what's happened. But at the same time, if Michael Parkhurst has a wobble, or if Jeff Lorenzovic has even close to a wobble, they've got serious problems.
Yeah.
No,
that's true, but they also don't put as much pressure on those guys, right? And because they've got, you know, more of the attacking talent up the field, right?
Yeah.
You know, and that's where you can get to tactics, right? It's like, you know, you could clearly see, like, I was just watching the Portland game today, you could clearly see that Martino was prepared well for Portland, right?
Right.
He told his players to, you know, keep on falling down, right? Fouls, right? You know, it's like, you know, so I think, you know, coaching matters. I have a stupid thing to say, right? But it's like, you're seeing better coaches now in the league. I think you can say that, right? Like, I'm so glad Cabrera finally got a chance in Houston, right?
Sure.
Got a somewhat decent roster, right? You're seeing Martino. You're seeing Vieira, right? Who's understood the league a little bit more. I mean, look at Perry. Brings in Ray, who's been probably a very underrated player. Again, brought in a central midfielder, right?
Well, when you're running off Owen Coyle and bringing in Tata Martino, you're doing good things.
Right, exactly, right? And so, you know, and it's funny because that's where you're going to see, like, you know, it'll be interesting to see coaches like Dom Kinnear, right? Like, will he be able to, like, augment his game now that he's got a little bit more talent to be more tactically savvy? Because you can argue that Kinnear's a good, very good coach, right?
Yeah.
But he's a very good coach because he knows how to manage the MLS season and he knows the MLS game, right? But if you start getting more talent in here, you know, like I'm waiting for this, the San Jose, or maybe it happens right, and I didn't see it, but San Jose, New York City FC game.
Right.
Like, you know, I want to see that out here in San Jose and see what the score is that game, right? Because there's a definitive strategy to Pierre's teams, right? Or definitive strategy, right? I mean, Pierre's seen it, I'm sure, too, but you're going to need to be able to adjust to it with more attacking players now, right?
Yeah.
Before, you know, before you just had a lot lot of, go back to like 2009, right, where the only team that was really playing possession soccer was ourselves, right? You know, truly playing possession soccer, right? And everybody, was like, how tight can your defense be and can you get your two or three playmakers, free in the attack, right? Well, that's not the game anymore in MLS, right?
Yeah.
Ball is just, you look at even Columbus. I'm not a huge Berhalter fan, but that is a very much an attacking system, right? And so now you've got a lot more of these attacking systems in place.
The next topic of conversation was more on MLS. We transitioned a little bit into some of the teams that are surprising us, starting with Orlando City, who, of course, were pummeled by NYCFC at home shortly after we recorded and called them invincible at home. Nonetheless, here's the expert, right? Here is the excerpt from that recording with, I think, slightly better audio.
2-1. I think Teams in Crisis they're pretty much invincible at home. They haven't played enough on the road, and obviously last week was bad. They got crushed in Houston, but I feel like Orlando, John Spector might be one of the best signings of the offseason.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Played that one game for center back with U.S. again. Solidifying your central midfield and your central defense, right? Not to belabor the point, but it's not like, I don't think it's like a mystery. Leonard is a killer player, right? So they use that luxury to them. I'm not sure I love Will Johnson at right back.
No.
But, I think his days are, his days might be numbered, but he has a system that he's playing, right? And he's got some talent for that system, and people are playing well in that system, right? I think they're right about where they are. He's just in their talent, right? And I'm not trying to say elementary. It's like, you're getting better coaches, you're getting better talent. So I would think, 4 or 5 years ago, you could really sort of take teams to task because they were more talent, the talent was actually more uniform. Right?
But yeah.
Again, you got 4 DPs, you got Scam and Ham, you got more different, you got players looking to MLS now, right? Like Jack Harris is coming up through there, but you got players who are, on the fringes of other leagues looking to play in MLS because it's a good enough salary now and they have visibility.
Yeah, Miguel Almirón, you saw him today, playing for Atlanta.
So your scouting, right, is going to be really key. Right, because the more you can take advantage of like the diamonds in the rough or the guy you thought who wasn't going to come to MLS, like that's changed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way maybe it could have happened, but 3-4 years ago, I wouldn't see Lodero considering going to Seattle, right?
No,
that's like he's like a major playmaker, right?
Sure.
So you didn't have those people coming like en masse to. And all you have is like Javi Morales and RSL, Scalotto, right? So,
the Costa Rican national team.
Exactly.
I mean, they're not bad, right? As we saw.
Right.
Nonetheless. So, and I can kind of wrap up on MLS a little bit, but just anybody that's kind of jumped off the page at you, like individually, or a team that you're like, wow, they're way better than I thought they were. 11 weeks in, it's almost still too early to draw those sorts of conclusions, but not quite.
I'll do a few things. Like, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Fire, because I still think they're a year away. So, like, the Fire's like an interesting one because they've got Janico McCarty and Schweinsteiger, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not sure all their attacking parts fit. I'm like, Zolomac, I hate that player. But it's almost like they have talent, but it's a little mismatched. So, like, they could be a bit of a wild card. They could either get it organized well or they could need another year, right? I think Sporting KC is going to be interesting to look at. And my guess is that they're going to burn out a little bit, just like they do every year, because, again, not enough depth, right? So I by and like supporting K-City in second place in the West. Because, like, you know, either they get a FF start or they don't each year, right, depending on injuries, right? But then that system wears you down throughout the year, right?
Yeah.
And you know, these the past 4 years, Fermi doesn't change the system. He's just been like, all right, I'm just going to see what we do, right? I think, you know, FC Dallas and Portland, I think, are kind of the tops in the West. I like Houston. I'm interested to see Cabrera's second go around with folks. They haven't won away from home yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, you know, when you're going down there, you're going in the heat, and you're in there, you know, and there's a lot of confidence, you know, where they are, and they haven't had any major injuries either, right?
Yeah.
The two Hondurans are pretty good. Kyoto and what's it, Ellis?
Albert Salinas.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, Cabrera's a good coach, and he's really good at wing play, right? So, like I like watching his teams because he's like one of the few, like, you know, if you look at, like Perea, he went under, right? Like, Perea's like a channel guy. He likes getting guys in the channels, right?
Yeah.
Like, Cabrera loves getting players out of the wings and, like, sending help to them and playing, like, 3-on-2s or 2-on-1s, right? But somehow he manages them all to get back into place for, like, defensive organization. So, that's always what's amazing about his teams, you know? So it'll be interesting to see if they can keep it up. No one's really, like, I would say I'm probably surprised where Orlando is. But, you know, with all these coaches, you'll see what happens on the second go-around, right? Like, everyone talks about, you know, part of parity in the MLS, right, is you get all the new talent, you get coaching changes, right?
Yeah.
And so when you play the teams for the first time, you're not exactly sure how they're going to line up, right? You're still figuring out your lineups, right? So I think that's why, you know, you're seeing a lot of parity now, which you do every year at the beginning of the year, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, what you're really looking for is that second go-around with teams, right? And seeing, like, what's different, you know, who's done the adjustments, you know, and then those folks will start to emerge from the packs. But, I've been impressed with Atlanta, for sure. Like, I don't care what anyone says, like, you're in the expansion side that didn't have a team last year, and you're able to take it to some of the better teams in the league.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I don't care if they lose every game for the rest of the year. Just how they started, you know, not really, but, you know, how they started out was pretty impressive.
Yeah. They impose their will on people. I mean, they might lose, but they're going to play their game.
We closed our interview talking about the U.S. goalkeepers, which was a subject of a recent Jeff Carlisle piece at ESPN.
And I jumped the gun on that. So we did transition to the U.S. men's national team next, and this was that clip.
Before I let you go, let's transition real quick to just, you know what I'm going to ask you? This is more interesting to me. Maybe it'll be more interesting to you. Are you more interested in the Gold Cup and kind of what Bruce does there, or are you more interested in, you know, what I think is probably an inevitable win-loss with Trinidad and Mexico?
Maybe they can get a point in Mexico.
Well, I'll be honest. I think this is the most talent that the U.S. has had in a long time, right? And, you know, I mean, when you can put Pulisic on the field, when you can put, you know, Nagy if he's playing well on the field, right?
Yeah.
We've got central defenders that are, you know, can stand up some of the better forwards in the game, right?
Right.
Like, not to be all, like, patriotic, or like the U.S. should be excited about this national team, right?
Sure.
Like, that was, you know, and so I'm definitely more excited, like, the senior side than the Gold Cup.
Okay.
For sure. I'm excited to see how Pulisic, you know, plays at the Azteca, right?
Right.
And even Nagy too, right? Like, you know, is Nagy going to play there? And can he continue to push himself?
So
right?
what's the best way to accommodate? So the two best American players are Fabian Johnson and Pulisic. I don't think this isn't rocket science. So what's the best way to accommodate those two players, assuming Fabian is healthy? And
I would say this. You know, just on background, I don't want to quote on this. I haven't seen Fabian Johnson play like incredibly yet in a U.S. shirt, right?
Other than the
you can argue, I mean, again, you're asking for a fucking Klinsmann team, right?
Yeah, well, sure.
Yeah. Right? But I haven't seen him, like, you know, maybe it's because he hasn't played left wing continuously and just, you know, hasn't had the ball on his feet. Like you remember the, and this, look, it's stupid to reference a friendly, but I still remember the game against Slovakia, right?
Yeah.
U.S. I think 4-3 under Klinsmann.
Yeah.
And Fabian Johnson just shredded the left side of the field. It's like, does that Fabian Johnson exist on the U.S. national team, right?
Yeah.
Is it like if you're, all right, so here's the thing, if you're asking for, like, the biggest, like who, which players, like, are you hoping that Bruce Arena can, you know, get inside the minds of or push, right? I think Fabian Johnson number one on that list by far.
Okay. I mean, I think that's fair. I think that some of it is, I'm not trying to bury Jurgen. I mean, some of it is, when he was playing his best soccer that he's probably played in his career at Mönchengladbach, he's playing wing, and then he came in, and Fabian has said, like, look, it's hard to come into a pop-up camp and play fullback after 2.5 months of playing on a wing.
And so, you know, and he definitely feels a player that is a, you know, has to be comfortable in their role, right?
Yeah.
Which is fine. Like, each player is different, right? So, like that's, like, I want to see how Arena uses him, right?
Sure.
Like, to me, he can be more of, like, a conduit outlet, too, right?
Yeah.
You know? And I like how he's used Nagby today, too. I mean, giving Nagby the okay to dribble out of the back of the field, you know, out of the, you know, defensive third, that's huge, right? Like, so I'm saying, like, probably Nagby and Fabian Johnson, right? And, you know, I would say probably Fabian Johnson, right? Like, we all know he's good, right? But even when you said it to me, you're like, you know, I don't think anyone disagrees that. Yeah, but I'm like, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, that's fair. It's fair.
There, right? So it's like, what can Arena get out of him? Right?
Yeah.
You know, and how does he set up the field so that he gives, you know, some freedom to him, right?
And a lot of that's just where he plays Pulisic, right? It's a domino. I mean, wherever Pulisic is, dictates probably who plays in the center of the midfield. It probably. Yeah. At least, you know, if he plays him inside, then, you know, that accommodates maybe Nagby and Johnson in advanced roles. I'm not sure. But it kind of does rotate around, or rotate's the wrong word. But it hinges on where Pulisic is deployed, I guess?
Well, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, for sure. It's like he's going to use him like he used Landon. Is what's the area of the field that I can get him the ball, right? You know, where it's at his feet and he has the decision to run a defense, make a pass, right, or slow it up, right, and you know, and manage the game, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the role that he wants to play. Same thing with Landon. Landon used to get the ball all the time around mid-line, right? And he was, should I combine with Keane? Should I take it myself? Should I hold it up, right? I think he wanted him in that role. I think Fabian could play a role too. Probably the second question is, which is, you know, the age-old question is, you know, I think Kellen Coffey has dealt himself into the central midfield dialogue, right? And if only because I've been watching Michael Bradley, and Michael Bradley does not go into as many tackles anymore.
No.
Or no. And he definitely plays, you know, he's very smart positionally, right? But, like, if you had to, you know, what, if you had to, like, offer me Michael Bradley or Jermaine Jones to, like, you know, make a tackle right now, I'm not sure I'm going with Bradley.
Sure.
Right? Now, Jones probably isn't there. But, so I think that's the question. Because to me, I've always had Bradley back deeper on the field. That's where he's better. I don't know if the U.S. has any true number six, nor if we want to play like that, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, when you look at Bradley, his first, he's the exact opposite. That was his first thing. If we play hero ball, that may or may not be cut out 1 out of 10 times, it doesn't get cut out, right? Like, it's in the attacking center and we have a shot on goal, right? Like, Bradley's best balls are, you know, think that's what, you know, I think that's what the U.S. needs. But and now, and again, now you've got, I think Acosta's in that dialogue now. And figuring out, like, that partnership in the middle of the field, I think it's going to be, obviously, you know. I mean, you just heard me talk about the central midfield, right?
So, yeah, sure.
Like, it's going to be that important.
Well, I mean, the Jones injury might be a blessing in some ways, just because it forces Bruce to kind of decide in the most difficult environment that they have. Which is an argument for Nagby, if we're being honest. Just, and this is something that you've kind of alluded to on Twitter, and half the time I think it's a joke, but it's there's a kernel of, like, of absolute truth to it, and Matt Doyle talks about it too, and you know, it's that when Nagby plays at home, he's just chopped down, and it's like, it's almost like watching sixth grade boys play, you know, like the best player, there's seven people in a circle around him, and it's like pig pen. Well, that's a useful thing to have experience with when you play at Azteca, because they swarm.
Yeah, yeah. No, look, he's good at, like, I love him against Bruce. Bruce said, you're going to stick here for the outlet, right?
Right.
Remember, Jones wasn't in that game either, right?
Yep.
You're going to stick here for that outlet, and it's your job to link and move the ball up the field. And I mean, like, you know, most U.S. midfielders, you give them that ball, and you give them the responsibility of people closing on them. And look, Honduras, I don't think, was really well prepared for that game. Or what's his face? Who's the coach of Honduras?
Pico. It was a shocking.
Pico, right?
Shocking.
Right. Right. Well, I think he thought that Reedham was going to be conservative, right? You know?
Yeah.
And, but then you had Nagby, who was dribbling out of the back and making plays, right? And it's like, the U.S. hasn't had that since, actually, if you think about it, Tarundula.
Yeah.
Like, Dempsey's not a guy that dribbles out of the back. Donovan was never a great guy specifically in traffic. Like he had his moments in traffic, right? But he wasn't the best guy who was going to carry the ball from you, from your defensive third under pressure, right?
Right.
So, like that's a big deal, right? Like, if Nagby continues to play like that, you can keep Pulisic high.
Yeah.
Right? You don't need to bring him back for that, right? So, I mean, it's great, because you look at, I mean, there's a lot of talent on this U.S. team.
Maybe that extends or makes it easier to decide what to do with Clint Dempsey. Because the problem with Dempsey, in the U.S. shirt at least, is you have two guys this cycle that have scored goals consistently. Wood and Dempsey. That's it.
Yep. I think you bring up a good point there. I think the interesting part on that, I hate the word interesting, but the point on that is, you know, you've got Altidore up top, right? And you know how I feel about Altidore.
Yeah.
and he is not prone to aggressively running off the ball, especially if things aren't going his way.
Right.
Then you got Dempsey, and I would say the biggest thing for Dempsey in that game against Honduras was he definitely felt he had something to prove, and he played defense. Like, he does not play defense for Seattle. Like, and he certainly is not as focused, zoned in, making all the right simple plays that he does with the U.S., right? But neither of those players are as active as much anymore to continually run off the ball.
Right.
Right? So I think when we talk about like Dempsey is not going to be able to hold up the ball, right? But he's going to score. Josie is going to score here and there and maybe in patches, right? He's certainly going to get his head down and capitulate way more than you like, right? But if you play both of those guys up top, it's almost like we were talking about, like, older Landon and Dempsey in some ways, and that they're not prone to running off the ball. So you need, especially if Pulisic is going to have the ball, right? You need to either, you know, ensure that Josie is going to run 90 minutes a game, which he's never done, or you got to put Wood in there, right?
It's tough because I know that the clamoring, at least internally among lots of the media and the fans, is you have to play out there or look at the way he's playing. I feel almost the exact opposite way.
Yeah.
And I'm good with, you know, give me 25 minutes of Josie out the door.
Yeah, I feel the same way as you.
But I don't know if that'll be I don't know if that'll be the the tact.
I think he'll play the Aztec just because he's big and he's played there before, right?
Yeah.
So if you look at him as somebody who's like the blocking fullback for the running back, right?
right.
Like he can at least weaken and knock those teams down, right? As long as he's getting focused in on that game. So I think it'll be Josie and Clinton starting the Aztec, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know if that necessarily works in like a tournament at the World Cup, right?
Let me close with this, and then I'll let you go.
And we closed our interview talking about the U.S. goalkeepers, which was a subject of a recent Jeff Carlisle piece at ESPN.com, which analyzed that the position had been one of strength in the United States, and there's certainly at least a perception that that is no longer the case. I asked Matt for his thoughts on that.
He's a terrible goalkeeper, but he's a good passer.
Yeah.
Matthew Tomaszewicz. You can follow him on Twitter at ShinGuardian. We'll definitely try to clean up the audio even more this week and repost all of this on iTunes if you listen to it in the next couple of days. Certainly, we appreciate that. We are on iTunes. You can also listen to the shows on a stream at Blog Talk. Next week, Carter Krishnayer will return, and we will talk a little bit about the U20 World Cup. Obviously, they had a thrilling 3-3 opening match with Ecuador. The good news was the fighting back to get the result. The bad news, the loss of Gedeon Zelalem, which I think is really damaging for Gedeon just in the sense that he probably had a chance to play with Arsenal, going to the Europa League, a tournament where Arsene Wenger was highly expected to play younger players. You know, maybe even if he doesn't do that, he gets a loan to the sort of team that's also in that competition. So, you know, it's just troubling at this point in his career to have that sort of injury. You never want to see that happen to anybody, but certainly not one of your promising midfielders. And, you know, despite the development of Kellen Acosta and the improvement of Emerson Hyman, Zelalem is still sort of a player that is on the upper end of the technical ability that the U.S. midfield has been lacking. So it'll be a big challenge for the United States, not just in this tournament without him, but certainly a big challenge for the young man. We wish him well. The U.S. plays Senegal at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. By the time you listen to this, if you didn't listen to it live, which I don't think anybody did, so I think we're good there. But by the time y'all listen to this on iTunes, and hopefully we have some of the audio cleaned up, the U.S. will have played Senegal, and they'll be two-thirds of the way finished with the group stages, with only Saudi Arabia remaining. I think 4 points will get them through to the next group, but certainly not entirely out of the question that that's not the case. We'll know a lot more about where they are at tomorrow, and Carter Krishnayer and I will be happy to talk about it. Thank you again for supporting Yanks Are Coming Soccer Show, for supporting YanksAreComing.com. Have a great week.